Last month, ground was broken on a 720-megawatt solar farm in the New England region. The $600 million New England solar farm is one of many industrial-sized solar farms across New South Wales, with investments soaring recently thanks to the designation of renewable energy zones. But as renewables continue to rise, it is unclear whether the electricity transmission network, designed for coal in the 1950s, can handle all that power. Toby Hemmings has the story.
It's another sunny day in Urala, just outside of Armidale in the New England region. 3 kilometres out of town, construction has begun on the New England Solar Farm, the new project from UPC AC Renewables. Killian Wentrup, head of solar development, explains.
We're very excited to have recently commenced construction of stage one of New England Solar Farm, which is a 400 megawatt solar farm project. So this is a development that's been roughly 3.5, nearly 4 years in the making. Stage one, as I mentioned, is 400 megawatts. We also plan to build stage two, which is 320 megawatts. And once the 720 megawatts is constructed, that will be enough clean renewable energy for around about 250,000 New South Wales homes.
There are currently 16 solar farms across New South Wales, with solar making up 12% of the total energy mix. The New England Solar Farm will be set to increase that share.
The 400 megawatt stage one, if that were online today, it would be definitely the biggest solar farm in Australia. Certainly, even when it's online in a couple of years, it will be a very significant size project.
New England is a prime location for solar farming. It might not have the sunniest climate, but it benefits from being geographically higher up, whilst maintaining a fairly cool ambient temperature, meaning that energy can be produced via solar panels with greater efficiency. The community has also been receptive to the project.
The landholders that we first approached were very open to talking to us. There's a history of renewable energy in New England. You might be familiar with some of the wind farms up around Glen Innes. So people were very attuned to renewable energy, and there was already some sort of discussion sniffing around, if you like, going on in the area. So we came in at a good time where people were already familiar with renewables. They knew what the opportunities meant. We're absolutely, you know, committed to making sure that some benefits flow back to the local community in a very direct way. And by the time the full project is operational, it'll be close to $200,000 per annum being made available for local initiatives.
All of these factors play into why the New England region was designated as one of 3 renewable energy zones by the New South Wales government. $13 billion is expected to be invested in renewable energy generation in the region over the next 5 years. But there is another factor at play.
The things that really attracted UPC to looking at doing a project in this area were firstly the transmission capacity available on the grid when we started investigating a potential project in the area was quite favourable. It's also a relatively robust part of the network compared with what we call in the industry being at the end of a long skinny line somewhere at the fringe of the grid. This is certainly not the fringe of the grid. It's part of the backbone of the eastern seaboard grid.
Transmission is a critical consideration in renewable energy. It's one thing to be producing power, it's another to get it from point A to point B.
The system we see today largely was designed to do those two things: large centralised fossil fuel-based power stations, or in two cases, large hydro, connected by long-distance transmission lines to balance the grid. And that was a very different world from the one we're imagining in the future.
Tony Wood, the Program Director for Energy and Climate Change at the Grattan Institute, explains how the shift to renewable energy makes energy production more mobile.
By comparison with coal-based or even gas or even hydro, these renewable energy projects don't depend to the same extent on those economies of scale. That is, you optimise the size of the wind turbine or the size of the solar panel, and then just lay them out. Broadly speaking, you're not constrained to where the coal is or where the gas is. You can basically build them wherever the wind is or the sun is. We've certainly seen a lot of wind farms particularly, and more recently solar farms, built around that concept.
What has made New England and other renewable energy zones feasible for further investment was the fact that there is existing capacity in the network to transmit this additional energy. Tony Wood explains what capacity means in this context.
It's a bit like when you think about the transmission grid, it's a bit like a highway. There's only going to be, you know, if you build a 2-lane highway, there's only a certain amount of capacity to deal with cars. As the traffic increases, you might have to add 2, 3, 4 multiple lanes of traffic. And once you do that, the capacity increases. Now, the same thing happens with electricity and even gas transmission lines. The problem, of course, is, as with a congested highway, at a point you get to, there's just not enough room left. And so the only answer is either go somewhere else or increase the capacity or to take in more generation. The renewable investment that's been made over the last 20 years was made where there was capacity on the transmission grid, a grid which was designed to send electricity from the middle out, not from the out in.
New South Wales' transmission infrastructure was designed in the 1950s with the specific goal of pushing electricity from coal-fired power plants in the Hunter to populous areas like Sydney. As renewable energy production means that energy can come from more diverse locations, Tony Wood argues that a new approach to the energy transmission is required.
It's no different from saying, how do you coordinate the building of the roads with the building of the homes and the factories? It's a very practical problem. It's not beyond the ken of humankind or human ingenuity to redesign it. But because the system was never designed this way and we've never thought about electricity this way, it is requiring a substantial change of thinking and a very different way of the way we go about planning our transmission system.
Matt Keane, New South Wales's Energy and Environment Minister, is pushing for $32 billion in private infrastructure investment in renewable energy over the next decade. With construction such as the New England solar farm underway, while coal plants age out of use, the stage is set for New South Wales to become a renewable superpower. But is the transmission network ready?
The answer is not very ready. We're better than we were, but we're not as good as we need to be. And so we have seen in very recent times, we've seen some renewable energy generators connect to the grid and find that they're constrained in terms of how much electricity they can send into the system. So I think this new system of distributed generation, which is also affected by weather conditions, and obviously with solar, whether the sun's up or down, that sort of system is going to be more dependent upon this transmission grid for moving electricity around than we've had in the past. We'll have to get a dam site better, closer to being right than we've had in the past.
The sun is still shining, but there's work to be done.
Toby Hemmings, ending that report.